Welcome to episode 11 of Page Turn, the Largo Public Library podcast. I'm your host, Hannah. Page Turn is a monthly podcast bringing you information about great books, library news, and fun library tidbits from your favorite programs, as well as a Spanish language book review from Victor. Kicking it off, as always, is Reader's Advisory. Every family has its problems, but even among the most troubled, the Plum family stands out as spectacularly dysfunctional. Years of simmering tensions finally reach a breaking point on an unseasonably cold afternoon in New York City, as Melody, Beatrice, and Jack Plum gather to confront their charismatic and reckless older brother, Leo, freshly released from rehab. Months earlier, an inebriated Leo got behind the wheel of a car with a 19-year-old waitress as his passenger. The ensuing accident has endangered the Plums' joint trust fund, The Nest, which they are months away from finally receiving. Meant by their deceased father to be a modest midlife supplement, the Plum siblings have watched The Nest's value soar along with the stock market and have been counting on the money to solve a number of self-inflicted problems. Melody, a wife and mother in an upscale suburb, has an unwieldy mortgage and looming college tuition for her twin teenage daughters. Jack, an antiques dealer, has secretly borrowed against the beach cottage he shares with his husband, Walker, to keep his store open. And Bea, a once promising short story writer, just can't seem to finish her overdue novel. Can Leo rescue his siblings and, by extension, the people they love? Or will everyone need to reimagine the future they've envisioned? Brought together as never before, Leo, Melody, Jack, and Beatrice must grapple with old resentments, present-day truths, and the significant emotional and financial toll of the accident, as well as finally acknowledge the choices they have made in their own lives. Today's Reader's Advisory is The Nest by Cynthia Dupree Sweeney. The Nest is a novel focused on dysfunctional family dynamics. The story is compelling, sardonic, moving, and pithy. The plot is driven by its flawed characters, and some readers may find them too unlikable to enjoy the novel. Readers may also enjoy The High Season by Judy Blundell. No matter what the world throws her way, at least Ruthie Beamish has the house. Lovingly renovated, located by the sea in a quiet village two ferry rides from the glitzier Hamptons, the house is Ruthie's nest egg, the retirement account shared with her ex-husband Mike, and the college fund for their teenage daughter Jem. The catch? To afford the house, Ruthie must let it go during the best part of the year. It's Memorial Day weekend, and Ruthie has packed up their belongings for what Jem calls the summer bummer, the family's annual exodus to make way for renters. This year, the Hampton set has arrived. Adeline Clay is elegant, connected, and accompanied by a gorgeous satellite stepson. The widow of a blue-chip artist in a world defined by luxury and ease, Adeline demonstrates an uncanny ability to help herself to Ruthie's life. Is Adeline just being her fabulous self, or is she out to take what she wants? When an eccentric billionaire, his wayward daughter, a coterie of social climbers, and Ruthie's old flame are thrown into the mix, the entire town finds itself on the verge of tumultuous change. But as Ruthie loses her grasp on her job, her home, and her family, she discovers a new talent for pushing back. By the end of one unhinged, unforgettable summer, nothing will be the same, least of all Ruthie. In a novel packed with indelible characters, crackling wit, and upstairs-downstairs drama, Judy Blundell emerges as a voice for all seasons, a wry and original storyteller who knows how the most disruptive events in our lives can twist endings into new beginnings. Or, The Children's Crusade by Anne Packer. Bill Blair finds the land by accident, 3 wooded acres in a rustic community south of San Francisco. The year is 1954, long before anyone will call this area Silicon Valley. Struck by a vision of the family he has yet to create, Bill buys the property on a whim. In Penny Greenway, he finds a suitable wife, a woman whose yearning attitude toward life seems compelling and answerable, and they marry and have 4 children. Yet, Penny is a mercurial housewife, at a time when women chafed at the conventions imposed on them. She finds salvation in art, but the cost is high. 30 years later, the 3 oldest Blair children, adults now and still living near the family home, are disrupted by the return of the youngest, whose sudden presence and all too familiar troubles forces a reckoning with who they are, separately and together, and sets off a struggle over the family's future. One by one, the siblings take turns telling the story. Robert, a doctor like their father, Rebecca, a psychiatrist, Ryan, a schoolteacher, and James, the malcontent, the problem child, the only one who hasn't settled down. Their narratives interweave with portraits of the family at crucial points in their history. Or, Oh, the Glory of It All by Sean Wilsey. Wilsey's father was a distant, wealthy man who used a helicopter when a moped would do, and whose mandates included squeegeeing the stall after every shower. Much of Wilsey's youth was spent as subservient to or rebelling against this imposing man. But the maternal figures in Wilsey's childhood were no less affecting. His mother, a San Francisco society butterfly turned globe-trotting peace promoter, seemed to behave only in extremes, either trying to convince young Sean to commit suicide with her or arranging impromptu meetings with the Pope and Mikhail Gorbachev, and Didi, his demon of a stepmother, who would have made the Brothers Grimm shiver. Bonus segment! My personal favorite Goodreads list The Nest is On is Birds on a Cover. Happy reading, everyone! Today's library tidbit is brought to us by the Life Committee.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for having us. I'm Emily.
And I'm Shelley.
And we're part of the Life Committee. The Life Committee was formed in 2017 for library staff by library staff. At Largo Public Library, we want everyone to feel welcomed and safe here. The library is for everyone, even staff. Just like everyone else, we want to feel safe while we are serving the public. For anyone that has worked at a job that is very people-intensive, it can be extremely rewarding as well as draining. We love serving our patrons, but sometimes even staff can get frazzled. That's why the Life Committee is here.
Our mission statement is, we do avow that just as books come in all shapes, sizes, genres, and colors, so too do our staff. The purpose of this committee is to ensure that all staff of the Largo Public Library, regardless of race, skin color, belief, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, age, national origin, disability, military service, or other distinguishing characteristics, may feel protected and safely accomplish their daily tasks without fear of emotional or physical harm. As a committee, we try our best to be there for staff, to offer support, to compile resources that may be potentially helpful, to make sure their voices are heard about various concerns, and to try our best to ensure that staff isn't dreading coming to work. So, what does that look like? Well, quite a few things. Life Committee has a reference library that has books about topics that relate to librarianship, such as A Guide to Homelessness, Security, Race, Making Libraries Green, Being an LGBTQ+ Person in the Library, and How to Deal with Difficult People. There are also articles about things such as homelessness and how to better serve every person in the community with understanding. There are also articles about how to identify various aspects of harassment. We recently added a handbook on what to do when you're experiencing a mental health crisis, such as how to identify it, where to go, and resources to help if any of our staff needed it. We hope our coworkers won't need it, but we figure it's good to have on hand just in case.
We also added a comment box that simply asks, what's going on? What's on your mind? Where staff can anonymously drop comments or ask a question. Some staff feel comfortable approaching us in person inquiring about specific things, and we take those concerns and comments to life meetings. In addition to this, we also have a bulletin board where we display in memory of articles of family, friends, and even coworkers as a memorial to those of us at the library that have experienced a recent loss. On that board, we also rotate articles about various aspects of working in a library. In the Librarian's Guide to Homelessness, weekly tip for working with homeless, mentally ill, or addicted patrons. On a more fun note, a brain break board was recently added. Sometimes it's hard to find time at work to take a breather, so a brain break is essentially just a little activity to take a moment and to be mindful, to think about something positive in your life, even if it's briefly. Also, we have a book recommendation of the month. This month's book is The Line Becomes a River, Dispatches from the Border by Francisco Cantu.
This past December, we also organized a winter feast for staff, where staff were encouraged to bring in their specialty recipe, and we shared a meal together. It was nice to do something different than the usual break room thing during such a hectic time of the year, and break out the culinary skills to cook for each other. And on a community level, this past holiday season, we took part in the Silver Santas program, which brought some holiday cheer to seniors of Pinellas County who were in need. Patrons were very receptive to that program, and we had many kind shoppers who made a seniors' holiday a special one. The Life Committee also assisted in fundraising and the preparation of baskets containing household necessities for 2008's Welcome Week. With the help of so many in Largo and Pinellas County, over 160 baskets were assembled and given to local refugees that sought safety from circumstances that seem unimaginable until you hear their stories. In times when things seem so uncertain and scary for someone, it is important to embrace them and to make sure they at least have the basics to have a successful, positive new start.
So you may be thinking, wow, I really like this idea of offering support to coworkers. How can I do something like this at my job? Here are some very basic tips for cultivating a supportive safe space at work. 1. Allow a space for communication and listen to what coworkers are saying. Be open to when people have concerns or constructive criticism and listen to someone to really understand them instead of listening only to verbally respond. Sometimes another perspective can be helpful. 2. Take self-care seriously. It can be so easy to overload at work on a constant basis, and sometimes working hard is called for, whether it's for a project, meeting a deadline, or because something didn't go as planned and you have to make do with a ho-hum situation. But you need to make sure you are doing things to decompress and take time for yourself. Read a book, take a bath, watch a documentary about something cool, paint, meditate, or even just sit in silence. Designate a little time for yourself each week or even each day to unwind. 3, be there for each other. Whether it's literally standing near your coworker when they are taking heat from a customer so they don't feel alone, or keeping an eye out for situations that could potentially escalate. Or if you have the emotional energy, just listen to a coworker vent a little bit about something going on in their personal life or a minor work annoyance that can help create a space to feel safe. 4, show appreciation for your coworkers. If someone does a good job, compliment them. If they help you out, thank them. It's important to show gratitude to those that you spend maybe 40 hours a week with. And while a treat can be nice, someone recognizing what you do and taking the time to say thank you can sometimes mean a whole lot more. These tips certainly are not limited to the workplace and how you treat your coworkers. When you don't feel good in self-care or feel safe at your job or even at home, it's hard to be nice to coworkers. It's hard to extend empathy to strangers. And it can be hard to communicate and be open to listening to others. As Mr. Rogers said, if you could only see how important you are to the lives of those you meet, how important you can be to the people you may never even dream of, there is something of yourself that you leave at every meeting with another person. The Life Committee wants to be there for our coworkers, so there is a comfortable, safe work environment. When you feel at ease at work, it allows space to be kind, to better serve the community, and to approach each other with kindness and empathy. Building a better world is not limited to just the workplace.
Thanks, Emily and Shelley, for coming on the podcast and giving us that great tidbit. And now it's time for Book Traveler with Victor.
Hola, mi nombre es Victor y soy el bibliotecario de acceso a la comunidad aquí en la Biblioteca Pública de Largo. Hoy les voy a hablar sobre un libro que tenemos en la colección de ficción que se titula Llámame por tu nombre, de Andre Iseman. La sinopsis es un joven estudiante americano viaja a Italia para profundizar en sus estudios de filosofía durante un verano. El hermoso pueblo costero en el que se instala servirá de marco para narrar la historia de amor que marcará la vida del joven y del sensible hijo adolescente de la familia que le acoge. La pequeña mansión es un refugio de belleza, cultura y armonía, donde la literatura y la amistad fraguarán una pasión que debe mantenerse oculta. Escrita con intensidad y emoción, Llámame por tu nombre es el relato de un viaje por los rincones más profundos de los sentimientos y el erotismo, y es también un canto a la belleza y al poder absoluto del amor. En mi opinión, Como ya dice la sinopsis, Elio es un joven de 17 años, hijo de un catedrático que recibe, en la casa de verano de sus padres, a un profesor y filósofo, Oliver, de 24 años. Es una rutina de la familia, explica Elio, ya que el libro está narrado en primera persona. Se hace todos los años con diferentes invitados, y estos permanecen 6 semanas hasta que se van. Comienza una atracción que llevará a un romance en silencio plagado de erotismo. La relación que se va gestando entre los dos muchachos crece lento, pero de manera sólida, y cala hondo. Sí, hay diferencia de edad, que en la película es mayor, pero eso no impide para nada que se consolide entre los protagonistas una conexión. Tienen muchísimas cosas en común, como los libros y el interés por el conocimiento. Los personajes se me hicieron hermosos y muy bien caracterizados. Elio, con sus 17 años, pero también con mentalidad adulto, tiene inseguridades, problemas y emociones a flor de piel. La narración es preciosa. Iceman hace un gran trabajo con Elio, ya que recuerda las experiencias de ese verano. Se intercalan monólogos internos, preguntas determinantes y pensamientos poéticos que le dan a la narrativa un toque hermoso e inolvidable. Las descripciones del autor son tan hermosas que el calor del mar, del verano, de las hojas y del sol se te mete en la piel y no te imaginas en otro lugar más que en Italia. Las ropas de cada uno también son fundamentales. Oliver, según Elio, intercala sus trajes de baños rojo, azul, amarillo y verde, dependiendo de su estado de ánimo. Elio usa las ropas de Oliver en un momento y Oliver las de Elio en otro. Porque llámame por tu nombre y yo te llamaré por el mío, es, además del título, la frase perfecta para describir el libro. Que en poquísimas palabras, la relación que tienen, además de un amor profundo y sensible, es el poder fundirse con el otro, ser el otro, o confundirte con el otro, porque en realidad su conexión va más allá de cualquier límite corporal. Y termino con una de mis citas favoritas del libro. El amor, al no tener geografía, no conoce fronteras. Léanlo si no lo han leído. La película está cosechando mucho éxito. Esto es todo por hoy. Hasta la próxima edición de Viajero de Libros. Adiós.
Thanks, Victor, for another great book review. As always, we've provided an English language translation in the show notes for those of you who may not know Spanish. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Here are some upcoming library events to keep track of. March 2nd, wake up with the library at 9 a.m. Registration is required. March 2nd, Ancestry DNA, I have my results, what's next? At 1 p.m. in the local history room. March 5th, backup and computer data protection at 6 p.m. in the local history room. March 5th, Largo Turns a Page Junior Book Club, Orphan Train Girl at 6 p.m. in the Jenkins Program Room. March 9th, Largo Turns a Page welcomes author Christina Baker Klein at 1 p.m. in the Jenkins Wing. Registration is required. March 11th, Poets Live at 6:30 p.m. in the First Floor Quiet Reading Room. March 12th, Heritage Quest at 6 p.m. in the Local History Room. March 13th, Chapter Chat at 6 p.m. at the Evermore Cafe. March 15th, Bead Bonanza at 2 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. March 16th, Jumping the Pond and Rubble to Ruin at 11 a.m. in the Jenkins Wing. March 18th, Cook a Book at 6 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. Registration is required. March 20th, Basic Microsoft Outlook 2013 at 3 p.m. in the Computer Lab. March 26th, Tai Chi for Kids at 4 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. Registration is required. March 27th, Getting Started with YouTube at 3 p.m. in the Computer Lab. March 30th, Family History Assistance Day at 12 p.m. in the Jenkins Wing. Have a great month, everyone. We hope to talk to you again soon. The High Season by Bluey.